Our next case this morning is number 05-2753, Glenn Hefferman against Yale Bass. Mr. Whitaker.
Good morning to each of you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Martin Whitaker here on behalf of the plaintiff below and the appellant here. As I know all of you know, this is another pleading case. Judge Plunkett dismissed the case on a 12B6 motion. It's generically best described and accurately described as a legal malpractice case. There was no... Though two incarnations of the complaint were filed, there was never any answer to the complaint. The amended complaint, as well as really the original complaint, pleaded this, the principal facts relevant here. My client went to the defendant, consulted with the defendant, paid him money. My client was promised by the defendant, "I'll protect you."
Could I just jump ahead here, Mr. Whitaker, because I'm looking at the in the appendix to your brief at page 19, and your complaint in paragraph 31 asserts that Mr. Bass is Mr. Hefferman's attorney. It says, as Mr. Hefferman's attorney, Bass owed Mr. Hefferman the professional duties of so on. And it makes other allegations. And I, you know, because in federal court we have a notice pleading regime, what I would like to hear from you is where in this complaint do you at least put Mr. Bass on notice of the allegation that the various losses that he incurred were attributable somehow to Mr. Bass? I mean, it certainly looks like he's got his problems with Mr. St. Pierre, and I don't know what's going on with collection of that judgment, but notice is what this is all about. And I see notice of the allegation of an attorney-client relationship, but I'm not sure about notice of the rest, particularly proximate cause, if you will.
Proximate cause of damages. And that was
well, but anything Mr. Bass did actually links up somehow with the harms that Mr. Hefferman suffered.
Among the harms Mr. Hefferman suffered are paying Mr. Bass's fees, which we affirmatively plead. That's on page 16, the paragraph, various paragraphs, 18 and 21 of the complaint. Those are among the losses that Glenn Hefferman suffered. And when I say, when I plead, and this is my complaint, these are my words, when I say Glenn paid Yale Bass money and Yale Bass didn't do what he promised for that money, I don't know how much clearer the notice can be of that loss, at least. It came up in the court below, and again, sort of obliquely in the briefs here, that, well, we've never pleaded damages, and we've got a real proximate cause problem here. And the proximate causation as to the loss of the business and the loss of the income stream may be a problem, and it'll be a very interesting case for discovery and trial. But the fact of damage, which is what I have to plead a good complaint, is there manifestly. Glenn Hefferman took money out of his pocket, gave it to Yale Bass. Yale Bass took it, used it on in consideration of a promise to make sure you're protected, and he didn't do it. Glenn Hefferman lost money directly by paying Yale Bass to act as his lawyer, and he didn't do it. If the complaint is not a little opaque about the theory of proximate cause as to the rest of the losses, I stand before this panel and say mea culpa. But I will not concede that we haven't pleaded sufficiently and sufficiently clearly loss and damage proximately caused to Glenn Hefferman by Yale Bass. He paid him. I mean, that's in my little precis here in my notes, too. One thing that I want to make sure is absolutely clear, and that I had hoped would be clear from the briefs, but I'll get the opportunity to make it clear here, too. He lost money directly by taking it out of his pocket and paying it to Yale Bass. Damages was never an issue here. I tried to impress that on Judge Plunkett and didn't succeed. And if you'll pardon me for going a bit overboard in response to the question, Your Honor, but I want to make sure that Judge Wood and all of Your Honors on this panel understand, too. At the very least, it's just manifest in the whole scenario and the basic facts pleaded here, Glenn Hefferman lost money directly to Yale Bass. There are nice questions on the facts here about the contours of legal duty and when and what type of duties are owed by a lawyer to a person who comes and a person who's part of an enterprise with others. But those nice questions, I think, miss the overall most significant fact here, and which allows those nice questions to be sort of set aside. Yale Bass made an explicit affirmative promise, pleaded in quotation marks in the complaint here, I'll protect you. I'll do it for a price. You pay the price, I'll protect you. Whether the business was the client, the corporation, not yet formed, was the client, whether he becomes a third-party beneficiary, whether he's the client, those are all, as I say, nice, cute questions, bemusing.
Well, you've alleged that he's an attorney. You allege that he was Mr. Hefferman's attorney.
Yes, and which I believe is the conclusion fairly drawn from this scenario. Even if I'm wrong about that conclusion, it shouldn't matter. Because if one, as a professional, even as a person who's not a professional...
Well, essentially what you're saying, to convert it into Rule 8 language, is that you're also alleging that there are other relationships that could be inferred from this course of events, from the interactions between Mr. Hefferman and Mr. Bass, that would also give Mr. Hefferman the right to relief.
Exactly. You anticipate me, Judge Wood. The other point I want to make is Rule 8. What I need to do is give a short, plain statement of the facts that shows the pleader is entitled to relief. Yale Bass, attorney or not, made a promise for money, for consideration. He didn't keep it. A shorter, plainer statement of the facts I simply cannot give, and that shows that my client is entitled to relief. There is loss. There is duty created. However one wants to pigeonhole the duty and however one wants to describe it in the world of tort or contract, there is a duty because of the explicit promise made. There is loss, and there should have been the opportunity for this case to proceed. I haven't yet gotten one of the warning lights, but I have hit on the salient points that I wanted to make in my initial presentation.
Talk a little
so
bit
subject
about,
questions.
That's a fraud claim. Does this meet the requirements of specificity and pleading fraud?
It does. I think it almost certainly does, Judge Ripple. The specificity requirements for fraud are time, place, and word spoken. It is, what shall I say, a distillate of the Rule 8 requirement of a short, plain statement of the facts. But you got to show when, where, and what was said. And I think the complaint does that more than adequately. As I say, the promise is made. The promise is pleaded in quote marks. It's done at his office in the months when Yale Bass knows when he consulted Glenn Hefferman in July and August of, ooh, I've lost the year,
2003.
Thank you for correction, Judge Wood. And I'll leave it at that. I have made...
You're into your rebuttal.
And I understand that, Judge Bauer, so I'll reserve whatever time is left to me for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll hear now from Mr. Grant.
May it please the Court. Good morning, Your Honors. Karen DeGrand on behalf of the defendant, Yale Bass. I would ask the Court to focus on the allegations of this specific complaint, and in doing so, I think that there is a glaring deficiency that's revealed with respect to the element of causation, and that pertains to both counts. All of the allegations of wrongdoing by Yale Bass are inconsequential, I'd submit, in light of the wrongdoing by John St. Pierre.
But Ms. LeGrand, you could focus more today than in your brief on the fact that all of the Illinois precedents that are cited in your brief are quite naturally cases against the backdrop of the fact that Illinois has a fact-pleading system. So you can dismiss complaints in state court for failure to plead facts supporting each element of a claim. You can dismiss cases in state court because certain legal theories are not adequately presented. But in federal court, under Rule 8, you don't need to plead each element of the complaint, of the cause of action. You don't need to plead legal theories. We have case after case where we say it's not necessary to plead legal theory. It's a notice pleading system. And whether Mr. Bass may have good ground to come in after some discovery on summary judgment and say that he had nothing to do with any of the losses, I really, you know, have no opinion on that at all. But it looks to me like the allegations are here of an attorney-client relationship, of losses that Mr. Hefferman incurred because of things Mr. Bass did in the context of that relationship. And, you know, all the rest is fluff.
Well, Your Honor, and I am cognizant of the difference between the Illinois cases and the federal cases, but if we examine the allegations that the plaintiff has presented, I think the allegations themselves preclude, as Judge Plunkett found, a conclusion that the plaintiff could establish causation based on this. If we separate out the complaint, the thrust is certainly in count 5, but also to a great extent in count 4 on this release. And to the extent that the allegations are focused on the release and on whatever role Yale Bass played with respect to that release, plaintiff cannot assert an injury because the release is not alleged to be legally enforceable. The release is not alleged to have been asserted by Mr. St. Pierre. And given the fact that the plaintiff has the judgment against St. Pierre, it was plain to Judge Plunkett, and I think should be plain in this court quite respectfully, that if there's a problem with the release, it's negligence in the air, it's aiding and abetting in the air, there's no causal link. And that's the problem with those allegations. And I would submit that
he does allege, though, that there is. He has this long list of allegation of Bass's breach of professional duties in paragraph 32 and just in falsely warranting to Mr. Hefferman that he would protect Mr. Hefferman's interests. And then in 33, he begins by saying, but for Bass's breaches of his fiduciary duties to Mr. Hefferman, Mr. Hefferman would not have paid Bass. All right, that's just for starters. Forget about the loss of the business, as your opponent was saying. Unless you could somehow read this complaint as a whole as including so many facts that it actually reveals fidelity on Mr. Bass's part to Mr. Hefferman as his attorney, and I don't really see that. It just seems to me that the wrong lens was used here.
And I'm struggling a little bit to see the lens as in terms of the way that Judge Plunkett.
Yeah, I mean, Judge Plunkett was looking for, I think, a level of detail that goes beyond, at the 12B6 stage, what the federal rules call for. I'm not speaking about the fraud counts right now because, as Judge Ripple points out, there's a special duty of pleading under Rule 9B that needs to be considered separately. But the malpractice isn't a fraud claim. Malpractice is just a tort. Maybe or maybe not, there's enough on fraud. As I say, I put that to one side. But I don't see where the lack of notice is or where you couldn't imagine a set of facts that, if proven, would give Mr. Hefferman the right to relief.
Well, Judge, if we focus on count 4, as the court suggests, and we set aside, you know, on the release issue, I think it's very clear as did Judge Plunkett, that the plaintiff didn't, or rather St. Pierre didn't use the release. The release isn't alleged to be effective in any way. The second agreement that was drafted by Yale Bass can't be construed to harm the plaintiff. If we look at the other allegations, they're conclusory. And the
why do they have to be more than conclusory?
Well, there has to be...
Have you looked at the forms at the end of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure? They're about as conclusory as you can get.
But when the allegations that the plaintiff presents establishes and forecloses the notion that there could be a set of facts that the plaintiff would prove that would satisfy the elements of the claim, I submit then a dismissal under 12b-6 is appropriate.
Well, as a general proposition, that would be right, but what's wrong as an allegation with Bass breached his professional duty as a lawyer by failing to advise Mr. Hefferman that his interests were or could be antagonistic to St. Pierre? Lawyers have a duty under, virtually every state's code of ethics, including Illinois, to advise clients of potential conflicts of interest.
That's true, Your Honor, but I believe that under the allegations that plaintiff has supplied in the Second Amended complaint, that is not a valid allegation because at the time that the relationship allegedly was being entered into, there's no reason that Bass should have been concerned or should have foretold that there would be a conflict between St. Pierre and the plaintiff.
That's a factual assumption that I can easily imagine you might go out and take a deposition or somehow support. I'm concerned very much just as a matter of procedure in this case with shutting it off at this early stage.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, and I realize that it's a fairly liberal standard here, but I think that this is a unique case that presents a basis for concluding that the plaintiff would not be able to prove causation and would not be able to link the general concept of a breach of fiduciary duty to the losses that ultimately the plaintiff contends that he suffered. And there is quite a lot of emphasis by the plaintiff in this case on the notion that Mr. Bass said, "I'll protect you," and this is in the context, as plaintiff has pleaded, it's in the context of a meeting with Hefferman and St. Pierre and Bass. And I think that the reasonable and the only reasonable inference from that statement is that, yes, he will prepare a document that sets forth what these parties have agreed to. And that's what he did. And the plaintiff has in no way been precluded from asserting his rights against St. Pierre, and in fact has successfully asserted his rights against St. Pierre. So the fact that...
Does the car wash still exist? Do you happen to know? Is there any evidence that there's been a collection on that judgment?
There's nothing in the record to suggest that other than the pleading, I believe, at the in the introduction to the Second Amendment complaint, Your Honor. And I think the plaintiff pleads that it's an ongoing business. But other than that, I think that's all that's in the record at this point in time. Given the allegations, that are supplied by plaintiff here, I think this does present the unusual case where the court rightly could conclude at the pleading stage that the plaintiff's theories or the plaintiff's conclusions about there being a claim for attorney malpractice, which is the only theory that's set forth in count 4, and the theory for aiding and abetting, which is set forth in count 5, are precluded by plaintiff's own allegations. And I think count 5 also, as Judge Plunkett said, is fatally deficient for establishing not only a substantial assistance by Mr. Bass, but also knowing assistance. And that is an essential part of that claim, and it seems to me respectfully quite clearly precluded by the allegations that the plaintiff himself has supplied. I see my time is up. We have additional bases that are set forth in our brief, and on all of these grounds, I would ask the court for affirmance of the trial court's ruling. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Grand. You have 1 minute, Mr. Whitaker.
The one thing I'd say in substantive rebuttal is the denial that there's any knowing assistance is risible. He said, I'll incorporate you. Paragraph 20 of the Second Amendment complaint, I'll incorporate you. He didn't do it. Before he even incorporated him, he created the document, Exhibit B, to the Second Amendment complaint, resigning him as a shareholder. You can't get out of the knowing requirement when you create the document, pulling out the rug out from under the client that you promised to set under his feet. The second thing I'd offer, if Judge Wood is truly curious, I happen to know a little bit about what happened. We haven't tried to collect. This is less rebuttal, but it is extra record fact. I got a call while all the post-judgment papers were going. I served John St. Pierre at the car wash. It's the only place my process server could find him. I got a call from a lawyer in Skokie after about 2 months of this, and he said, how much did he sell it to your guy for? He sold it to my guy for another $50,000. And I said, same amount. The upshot up was that on trying to take over the car wash after he had conned the second victim, he ended up in Cook County Jail. He called the police. The police came and actually arrested him and sent him to Cook County Jail. There have been no collection efforts. I thank the panel very much for your time.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.